Tomorrow, the 47th annual World Economic Forum gets underway in Davos, Switzerland. It's a gathering where the rich and powerful make deals and talk about the global economy. But this year, with the election of Donald Trump and the vote for Brexit in the UK, will the conversation be different? Joining us now is Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic. Hi, Derek.
Hello, Jamie.
And I think it's fair to say that this group of people gathering in Davos is pretty pro-free trade, pro-globalization. So with what we've seen in the last year, with Trump's election, with Brexit, they've made the theme of Davos this year responsive and responsible leadership. Is that a response to what's happened?
Responsive is a great euphemism for what a lot of these people must be feeling, which is, oh my God, what is happening in the world? Davos represents, you know, the few, the rich, the elite plotting the future of the planet. But it turns out that the planet's future is actually plotted by the will of the many. And in the U.S. and to a certain extent in the U.K. and across Europe, it is the non-rich, non-elite many who have delivered several crushing blows to the Davos way of thinking, which, as you said, emphasizes free trade and a kind of globalized prosperity. But the movement among the developed world seems to be less open, more protective, more let's take care of ourselves first. And this sort of runs antithetical to the Davos strain.
And we should point out, as Andrew Ross Sorkin does in the New York Times today, that Donald Trump has never been invited to the gathering at Davos. But do you think that the people who are there, because of what's happened, are likely to change their own views on globalization and free trade, or simply try to convince the winners that they should follow them instead?
I think you're going to see a lot of triangulation. I think you're going to see a lot of people saying, you know, this is what we said. This is the idea that we predicted would take over the future of the world. And clearly it is not taking over the present of the world. Trump has been advancing, though, an argument that's probably most familiar to some economists from the left when it comes to trade. Economists who have said that globalization has all sorts of negative side effects for local communities that are exposed to Chinese and Mexican trade, that it's bad for the U.S. to run a persistent trade deficit and all these ideas. And so I think that, you know, what Trump has done in many ways is scrambled the ideological map and made it very confusing to pin him down. And so I anticipate that because Davos is populated not only by, you know, not just academic thinkers, but also practitioners and people who actually make policy, that they're going to try to chart a central course and say, how can we adjust given the realities of the last 12 months?
And they'll do that while sipping on a delicious hot cocoa in the mountains of Switzerland. Derek, I want to ask you about something else. There's a new Harvard study out on the American dream and specifically how many people in the U.S. believe that the American dream is real, that you can climb the economic ladder no matter who you are. What did researchers find?
Two findings. First, that Americans are extremely optimistic about social mobility, the ability of poor Americans to climb that economic ladder. Europeans are much more pessimistic. The second main finding is that attitudes predict policies. If you're pessimistic that poor people can get rich on their own, you tend to think, well, we should give them welfare. We should give them subsidies. We should help them out. They need our help. Whereas if you think that poor people can get rich on their own without government help, then you say, well, there's no need to help them. Let's just make sure that government stays out of the way. And the natural state of economic affairs is one of extreme social fluidity. And it's interesting to talk about social mobility in the same segment as Davos,
right?
Because if you ask people in Davos, do you want the poor to have a better shot at getting ahead? I presume most of them will say yes. Who says no to that? But social mobility implies fluidity between the classes. If the poor get rich, yes, but also the rich aren't guaranteed their wealth. The rich can get poor too. And I'm not sure that financiers are across Switzerland sipping that hot cocoa are going to want to promote policies that could impoverish themselves and their families.
Well, how do the perceptions of the American dream break down in this country between liberals and conservatives? Are they different?
There's a huge difference. Left-wing respondents, liberals, are more likely to support more distribution, more welfare when they hear how bad social mobility is. Essentially, they see social mobility, bad social mobility, as a sickness for which welfare is a medicine. Conservatives, however, tend to believe, in the modified words of Ronald Reagan, that not only is government something that cannot fix the problem, government is the problem. And so no matter how bad you describe social mobility to right-wingers in the U.S., this study found, they still won't support more government help for the poor.
And the people who are the most optimistic about climbing the ladder, these researchers found, live in the areas with the least economic mobility.
Right. It's very interesting. I think this is the crux of it. You have these pockets of the U.S. that have long histories of segregation and states' rights advocacy and resistance to government welfare assistance that goes back decades. And possibly because the traditions of welfare and public investment in schools and neighborhoods is low in these areas, social mobility there is not great. But ironically, it may be precisely the belief that social mobility is possible if you just take away government help that is contributing to their plight, that essentially the American dream in some parts of America is eating itself. And it is this quasi-religious faith that, of course, the poor can just naturally work their way up to become rich that keeps many Americans from supporting the kind of welfare policies that actually makes social mobility most possible for the low income.
That's Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic. We'll link you to that study at hearandnow.org. Derek, thanks as always.
Thank you.